You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and welcome to episode 249 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this episode, you know, it's kind of a spin-off of an episode about a year ago. About a year ago, I did episode 185 on myth-busting, and I talked about some common myths and beliefs that gun owners have and that people who conceal carry have. Well, a listener wanted to take issue with something I said back in that episode, and it's about bringing a knife to a gunfight. So I decided to go ahead and just make this the title of the episode. Should you bring a knife to a gunfight? Some people say yes, some say no, some say that's ludicrous. Well, that's the subject matter I'm going to dig into in this episode. So I think you're going to like it, and that'll get to the main topic. The main topic is a few minutes away because I got some voicemails that I want to cover. Some voicemails have come in, some really good ones. So let's take some listener voicemails as I get started here, and then we'll get into the main topic. The first one comes from Chad in Dallas.
Hey, Bob. Chad up here in Dallas. Just listened to your latest episode. Really just still thoroughly enjoy what you're putting out there. Not a comment on that topic, but just something that I'd come up with that let you know and let some of the other your listeners know. And wondering if you ever videotaped yourself doing dry fire practice or actually range practice. Now, I know you post the videos up, but that's, you know, from a cameraman 10, 15 feet away. I'm talking actually either putting a camera right up in your face, aiming on your gun while you're at the range, or, I mean, for that matter, attached to your weapon somehow. Quick funny, was talking to some friends the other day about the benefits of the red dot versus the four-time ACOG or a real scope on an AR. And I was fighting tooth and nail about just an unmagnified red dot and about how you can shoot with both eyes open and all this other stuff. And lo and behold, my next dry fire practice with my AR, I had this cheap little HD camera and mounted it using a scope ring and all this other stuff. Lo and behold, when I'm pulling the rifle up to get a good sight picture, my right eye's closed. I'm left-handed, so my right eye's closing when I'm shooting. So it's pretty funny that I'm sitting here saying that the best benefit of the red dot is that you can shoot with both eyes open, and I'm not even doing that myself. So putting this back into the handgun world, videotaping yourself while you're practicing real close up so you can see the weapon, stuff like that. You know what? You might not think that, you know, you think that let me rephrase that. You might think that you're taking your finger off the trigger when you're doing a mag change or something like that. But, you know, that finger might just be barely coming off the trigger, just resting right there. And you won't catch that in real time, but you can catch it in videotape. No reason why the NFL and, you know, college football and all that, go back and review tapes all week long because you can catch a lot of mistakes with videotapes. So just wanted to put that out there and let other people know. I was quite surprised at myself that I'm sitting here championing a cause and championing one thing, and then realized after reviewing the tape that I wasn't even doing it correctly. So keep up the good work, and we'll see you in a few weeks in San Antonio. Talk to you soon.
Well, that's a great point, Chad, videotaping dry fire practice. I'm going to do that. I'm going to try to videotape some of my dry fire practice, and I'm going to try to tape it from a real close proximity, like a couple feet away. It's a great idea. You would be amazed how you pick yourself, or how you you find yourself making a lot of mistakes, and you pick up on that when you watch the videotape. It's another reason why dry fire practice is so important. But like you said, watching a video of yourself just practicing. It's funny that, Chad, that you mentioned shooting with both eyes open. For me, it's very unnatural to close an eye. Yeah, it's unnatural to close an eye for me. I taught myself to shoot with both eyes open. That's the way I was told. One thing I want to credit my first instructor, the guy that taught me to competition shoot, I want to credit him with one thing. He said, by the way, his name was Dave. I'm not going to talk about his last name because he hasn't given me permission to do that. But Dave taught me, he said, keep both eyes open when you're shooting. So for me, it just seems natural. It seems natural. And I really believe in both eyes open when you're shooting all times, especially from a defensive standpoint with anything, rifle or handgun. Mainly with a handgun, though, because your other eye that you're not shooting with, your non-dominant eye, gives you such a better field of view. You can see depth better. Your peripheral vision is better, so you can identify threats from coming from other directions. And your depth perception is just naturally better with binary vision, with two eyes. So, yeah, videotape yourself. And, Chad, good idea. I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to videotape myself dry fire practicing, probably several things. I'm going to videotape myself doing reloads. I'm going to videotape myself clearing malfunctions. And I'm going to videotape myself pressing the trigger and try to get it from different angles so that you guys can watch my eyes and so I can watch what I'm doing. You make a good point about professional athletes, football, baseball, basketball, mainly football. You know, they go and they watch the videotapes. These guys are pros, right? These guys are supposed to be the best of the best. But what do? They watch videotapes because they can see themselves on video making mistakes. It's no different when you're shooting a gun. So good point, Chad. Chad's coming for our rifle class in October, our one-day rifle class that we're doing on October 12th. So, Chad, I'm looking forward to seeing you then. Okay, next, let's go to Denny in Michigan.
Hi, Bob. Denny in Michigan. And the reason that I'm calling is because I listen to your podcasts and I really enjoy them. I enjoy everything that you do. And a lot of times you think some of the things that you say, you know, are probably something that is going to happen to the other guy. And about 3 weeks ago, I got myself into a real stuff hit the fan situation. I woke up in the morning, regular everyday thing. All of a sudden, my arm went numb. I didn't know what was going on. We made a call to the ambulance, my wife and I. And a few minutes later, I'm on my way to the hospital in pretty much a life and death situation. I thought I was having a heart attack, but that wasn't the case. The good thing that came out of it is I'm still here. But what I wanted to share was some time back, we made a go bag, especially for the hospital. And that had some things in it, simple things, like phone chargers, a little bit of cash, some pajamas, some basic things. And it sure made everything easy. You know, sorry I'm a little bit emotional, but it brings back the memories of just how lucky I am and how lucky I am to have the wife that I have. But I did also want to say that, you know, in my car, in my truck, I also, carry a handgun. And, my wife jumped into my truck and drove that to the hospital. And I think back and I think how lucky I am that my wife had a concealed carry license. And she wasn't driving around with a handgun in the car that possibly could have got her in trouble. Not to mention, whatever else might have been going on. But we survived. A lot of preparation tips certainly carried us through. All your tips and training tips and everything else that you pass on, they really came in handy. I recommend them. I applaud you for just the things that you do. And, be safe and, appreciate everything that you do. Thank you.
Thanks, Denny. As I've mentioned before, folks, this is what I live for. This is what podcasters and trainers live for. Success stories like this that come in from listeners that hear something on this show, and I don't make this stuff up, folks. I typically borrow information from other people and give credit where credit is due. And on this podcast and on my prepper podcast called Today's Survival Show, I've talked about setting up a 72-hour emergency kit. Some people call it a go bag. Some people call it a get-home bag. Whatever you want, name you want to give to it, I don't care what you name it. Damien from Dallas brought it up in a voicemail several weeks ago. Have some kind of a bag in your vehicle ready to go that is everything you need for 72 hours. And if you're like Denny, keep enough stuff in there that might be some small first aid stuff too. Keep some first aid stuff in there, some extra food, some extra water. Like he said, some chargers, some power inverters, and things you can use to charge things. Extra sets of clothes, shoes, socks, all those things can come in handy, and you never know when you're going to need that, just like Denny needed it. So it's heartwarming. Thank you, Denny. I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear people are actually putting to use some of the stuff that they hear on this show. That's what it's all about. And see, it all comes from training. I know you're saying, Bob, there you go. You're talking about training again. Well, here's an example where Denny got some training, or even listening to this podcast is a form of training. Okay, you're opening your mind. You're taking in information. And when you act upon it, that's a form of training. So that's why it's important that you at least soak up ideas and put to work. And as I always say, take the best and leave the rest. Denny took the best. He made himself a go bag, and it's paid off. So thank you, Denny. I appreciate that. And best of luck to you up there in Michigan. Keep me posted on, you know, your progress and things and how things go. And I really appreciate you calling in the voicemail. I love success stories like this. Okay, let's listen to Mike in Jupiter, Florida.
Hey, Bob, this is Mike from Jupiter, Florida. I wanted to comment on your show. I forget the number, but the theme was making decisions based on emotions and justifying with reason. And Damien later commented on how polarized discussions get to be. 1911 lovers don't necessarily, in his view, don't necessarily express themselves with the strength of the 1911, but instead argue about the weakness of striker-fired pistols. Glock owners, the reverse. I see that actually as part of a major trend in this country to intense polarization. And it's interesting because it actually seems to track the rise of the digital era. And polarization gets to be digital. There's a off and an on. Someone is 100% for and zero against. And track that across all kinds of issues. So what you hear are Fox News, 100% conservative, and so much so that it involves attacking the other side as much as it does expressing a view, and switch to MSNBC, and you get the reverse, 100% liberal, and so much so attacking rather than espousing a view. You know, I'm getting to be a little, I'm old enough to be called a curmudgeon at this point. I'm 64 years old. And it hasn't always been like this. Congress seems to be an excellent example of the dangers of this polarization. If you get polarized enough, nothing happens. Now, there are some of us who think nothing happening in Congress might, in fact, be a good thing. But the truth is, one of the things that's going on right now that really does bother me a lot is that we're expecting so much out of our military, where they are facing four or five or six tours. And at the same time, sequestration is taking money out of the military budget on a regular basis to the point where the chief of staff of the services doesn't really know what his budget is in the coming month. And yet we're prepared to take on yet another military action in Syria. That polarization is ultimately going to lead to an awful lot of trouble. I thought Glenn Tate actually illustrated that very well in his book, 299. And the Patriots book by Max Velocity does the same thing, the polarization into the new regime and the Patriots. I just wanted to say on this polarization issue that I think it is a it's an incredibly dangerous trend, and it does lead to two different armed camps in this country that eventually hostilities have to explode. And it doesn't have to be so. I, for one, like 1911s and Glocks, and I see a completely different value in both. I love the trigger on a 1911, and I love the fact that a Glock just runs and runs and runs. It never seems to have any problems. Anyway, that's my comment, and keep up the good work. Love both your programs, and listen to them every week. Bye now. Oh, and Bob, as you know, I've been going through my own personal crisis with my son. Things are starting to look up. He's now in about to come home and continue his physical and speech therapy on an outpatient basis. And I just have all the best thoughts in the world for you and your wife. Our prayers are with you. It's a terrible thing to have a crisis in the house. See you.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, polarization is a problem, and there's no doubt about it. There's a problem in politics with polarization. I don't like to get involved in too much politics on this show because it's just one of those subjects that there's so much out there on politics already that when I started this show, gosh, you know what? It's been over 4 years ago. Hey, I forgot the four-year anniversary of the Handgun World podcast has already passed. Well, hey, let me take this opportunity to say happy birthday to my own show. This reminded me when I started talking about when I first did the show. It was August of 2009 when my first episode came out. Anyway, I decided I did not want to have a political show, that there was enough people out there doing political shows already. But yeah, Mike, you're right. There is too much polarization going on. Your point about the military, great point. I just want to say again, I appreciate all of the men and women who wear the uniform of the United States military, any branch. I appreciate them, and I appreciate their service to our country. I did not serve. I regret I did not serve. And I guess in a way, doing this podcast is sort of my way of serving and giving back. So once again, I salute all of the men and women that have worn or that do wear the uniform of the United States military. And every day I appreciate the freedoms that they fight for. And the fact that they're not funded well, I think, is not a very good thing. And Mike, you make up a pretty good point here. And that is, here they're underfunded and not as well equipped as they should be. And this current administration is considering getting involved in yet another military action that we don't need to be in. That's all I'm going to say for politics on this show right now. Now, as far as the polarization, I do want to say something about that. Some people are making comments, and Mike kind of alluded to it in this voicemail, comments such as, well, you know, we shouldn't debate 1911 versus Glocks or M&Ps, and people are getting polarized. And here's the comment that I see a lot being made lately. We should quit dividing ourselves, because we're just dividing ourselves unnecessarily, and the anti-gunners are going to use that against us. Really? That's not what I hear anti-gunners say. I hear the anti-gun people. I don't hear the anti-gun people say, ha, look at them, they're arguing 1911 versus Stryker-fired pistols. Boy, are they all messed up. Do you hear that? Come on, these anti-gun people, they don't even know what a 1911 or a Stryker-fired pistol is. They're not reading the forums that we read, most of them. And even if they do read the forums we read or listen to the podcasts we listen to, they probably don't know what half the stuff that we're talking about even means. Right? I'll bet you a lot of them know what a 1911 45 ACP pistol looks like. But when they hear us call it a 1911, they probably don't know what we're talking about. When they hear us say Stryker-fired pistol, again, come on. A lot of these people who are not gun people, and most of them are anti-gunners, they don't know what that means. So the idea that we're dividing ourselves, debating the merits of different pistol platforms, I don't buy it. I'm sorry, folks. I don't buy it. I don't buy the fact that it's giving giving the anti-gunners the advantage. No. Hey, at the end of the day, all gun owners are pretty much in the same camp. We love our firearms. We believe in our Second Amendment freedoms. We believe in our inherent right to self-defense. And I'll bet 95% of the people who listen to this show, participate in forums, and own and carry guns, 95% of them at the end of the day, when the rubber hit the road, at the end of the day, they are going to support the Second Amendment. So we're not really dividing ourselves here. I just don't buy that argument. Now, do some people like to trash other pistol platforms? Well, yeah, they do, and they shouldn't do that. I don't think they should trash it. Like I said, I'm in sales. I have learned in 28 years of being a pretty successful salesperson that it's better to accentuate the positives of your product rather than to trash your competition. Once again, accentuate the positives of your product and hope that if you do a good enough job of presenting the positives, that they will buy your product. It's the same thing when you talk to somebody about the type of pistol that they should purchase. Accentuate the positives and try to avoid trashing the competition. But again, the idea that it's dividing gun owners, I think that's baloney. Anyway, Mike, your comment about polarization is a very, very good one. Thank you. And it is causing some problems. And thank you for that voicemail. Okay, next, Damien from Dallas, who calls in a lot, but he's always got good stuff to say. Here you go.
Hey, Bob, this is Damien from Dallas, man. Just wanted to call in on podcast number 246. And, man, what a fantastic podcast. That was with John Payne and talking about the small covert pistols, and I got so much out of that. I wrote down a lot of notes, picked up a lot of nuggets, and it's always great when you got John Payne on there. And I really enjoyed learning from John Payne at close range gunfighting, and now you guys are talking about advanced close range gunfighting, and man, I need to figure out a way to get out there and train with John Payne again in San Antonio, because that was fantastic. I still am using a lot of the things, most of the things that I've learned, I've retained and practiced here. Of course, you know, it's always good to get refreshers, but it's been a fantastic class, and I can just imagine the advanced version is going to take it to a new level. But definitely good to hear John Payne on there. I always get so much out of him. So anyways, just looking forward to more of your podcasts, and I'm going to try to see what strings I can pull to see if I can make it to the advanced version of the class, because it was a fantastic investment. So just wanted to say, man, great podcast, bud. Keep it up. And I also am going to work in some of your training courses that you do. I'm too lazy. I may wait till you come to the Dallas area to do some of the classes out here, but definitely something that I want to get done and take some of your training classes. So with that, take care, bud. Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you, Damien. Hey, don't wait too long. It might be a while before I get back up to the Dallas area again. The rest of this year, I'm pretty much very busy, so it's probably not going to be until after the first of the year. Don't wait that long. Hey, it's fun to come down to San Antonio. San Antonio is a fun place to visit. Our weather has been great lately. We've gotten a lot of rain lately, so things have greened up a bit. Plus, you know, we got the Riverwalk, we got SeaWorld, we got Fiesta Texas, we got all kinds of cool restaurants and everything down here. It's a great weekend. Come on down to one of our training classes. Make a 3 or 4 day weekend out of it if you can. So again, folks, if you're interested in our classes, and you can go to handgunworld.com. I'm not going to talk about every single class we have coming up. Just go to handgunworld.com. We have rifle and pistol classes and a night shoot, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more. A low light and night fighting class coming up. But Damien, I'm glad you liked the Covert Compacts episode. Yeah, John Payne has a lot of good stuff to say about Covert Compacts. He's also doing another article about pocket pistols again. He's doing another DVD on pocket pistols, so watch for that. I'm sure he'll email me and let me know when that's ready, and I'll put the word out to all of you. You know, you can do so much with compact pistols, especially subcompact pistols. You can do so much with guns like the XDS and the M&P Shield. And you know what? Both of those companies will get this recall issue worked out, and those will be fine pistols. They still are. They just need to get all the little bugs worked out of them. And you can do real well with things like Glock 26s and M&P 9 compacts and XD subcompact pistols and things like that, and car arms guns. And even the little Bursa, for some of you on a budget, you know, that new little Bursa 9mm that's out. I've had a chance to mess around with one of those. Not shoot one. I'd love to shoot one, but I had a chance to go to a gun store and mess around and dry fire and get the feel of it. And not a bad gun for the money. So all those guns out there, there's some good buys out there and some good stuff happening. And it's the golden age of handguns, so jump on them while you can. All right, Damien, thanks for calling that in. So we're ready for the main topic. Should you bring a knife to a gunfight? There's going to be a quick break, a sound effect, public service announcement, or something. And then what you're going to hear is Alan in Utah. A listener by the name of Alan in Utah sent me an audio clip, and he takes issue with something I said about a year ago regarding bringing a knife to a gunfight. Well, certainly, I've got some comments about this, but let's listen to Alan's audio clip. Again, we're going to take a quick break. There'll be a public service announcement, something like that, and then we'll get right into Alan in Utah and the main topic.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Well, during the break, I want to talk about a couple things. We have a brand new video up on the Shooters Club podcast. For those of you who are members of our Shooters Club, lots of you have been signing up lately. Thank you very much. We got two new videos up there, so I think you're going to like it. There's more on moving and shooting and reloading on the move and things like that, and combat on the move and advancing and retreating. And then there's also another good video on zeroing a rifle. So if you want to zero your AR-15, we have some good info on that. Also, I'd like to announce the first official sponsor of the Handgun World podcast. I normally have not had a practice of doing sponsorships, but I decided to bring on a company who's not paying to be a sponsor. But what they're doing is they're offering discounts to the listeners of the Handgun World podcast, and in full disclosure, they sent me a small sample of their product that I'm using, and that's American Gun Oil. So, Michael at American Gun Oil, thank you very much. Let me announce that American Gun Oil is one of the official sponsors. I plan on bringing on several of them, but he is one of the official sponsors of the Handgun World podcast, and I am working on a possible extra discount for Shooters Club members. But go to AmericanGunOil.com. I use this oil. They sent me a sample, and I've been using it now for a couple months. I really, really like it. I've been a big Militech guy, and I used up all the Militech that I had, and I switched over to American Gun Oil, and I like it. Really, really good stuff. Makes it easy to clean, protects, lubricates, does a great job, doesn't have a lot of buildup. And it's got real low viscosity, and it creates a real thin barrier between all the metal moving parts. I'm using it on my AR-15s. I'm using it on all my pistols, and even using it on a couple of my folding knives, and it's working real good. So go to American Gun Oil. Now, Handgun World podcast listeners get free shipping. So all you have to do is use Handgun World in the coupon code, and you got to go to a special page. I will put a link in the show notes for the special page on their site to go to. And when you order, put Handgun World in the coupon code, and it will delete the shipping, and you'll get free shipping. So again, go to the show notes for this episode, click on the American Gun Oil link. And Michael, thank you very much. There's another product manufacturer. We're still trying to finalize everything, but he's also going to offer discounts, this other manufacturer that I'm going to tell you about probably next week. He's going to offer discounts to Shooters Club members. Speaking of Shooters Club, there's a new $8 a month subscription. If $75 is hard for you to afford, you can do it $8 a month through PayPal. Just click on the Shooters Club button and you can read all about it, and you can take a look at some of the videos. And if you want to go to shootersclubmembers.com, shootersclubmembers.com, there's a sign-up link there and a sample video and a sample audio you can listen to and so forth. We really appreciate it. At the end of the year, we'll be doing something very special for all Shooters Club members, all of them who have joined us since day one, almost a year ago. All right, that's the end of the break. Let's get into the main topic.
Hi, Bob. This is Alan in Utah. A year ago, you did an episode. It was episode 185, and it was titled Myth Busting. And I listened to it last year, and I was really troubled by one of what you termed a myth in that episode. And I didn't respond because I just lit you up on something else, and I figured that you missed the point on this saying by so badly that somebody else would respond to it. And even though I've listened to every episode, I've never heard any mention made of what I deem was a huge error in that episode. So I wanted to respond, even though it's a year later, and correct what you said there. In that episode, you were going through little cliches that we have in the gun world and debunking some of those. And you hear them in the gun stores. You hear them said. Several of my agrees. For example, you say, somebody hears the kerchunk, kerchunk as you cycle your shotgun, they're going to get scared and run away out of your house. And while that might be true, very, very poor tactic to rely on. Things like a 380. If you shoot somebody with a 380, you're just going to piss them off. While I don't personally carry a 380, I think that a 380 has very valid merit as a self-defense weapon. And I can see why people would want to carry that, because it's small and concealable and still gives you something when a 9mm or a 45 isn't an option. So for the most part, I agree with the myths that you busted in there. But you presented one thing as a myth, and that is don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And I don't think that's a myth. I think that's a universal truth. Now, in your explaining of it, you interpreted that to mean that you're saying that a knife's not an effective tool. I mean, you said, come on, go take force-on-force training. You'll see how effective a knife can be. You actually encouraged us to go out with our buddy, get a training knife and a blue gun, put your buddy 7 yards away, have somebody say, go and see if you can draw the blue gun before he can get to you with the training knife. No problem with those things. A knife's a very effective tool, especially with somebody that knows how to use it. It can cause severe damage. Understand all those things. But the saying, don't bring a knife to a gunfight, is not a myth. As I said before, it is a universal truth. And let me give you a little hypothetical situation here to kind of show the point. Let's say you're sitting in the living room watching SportsCenter or whatever, just before you turn in for bed. You're in a pair of sweats and a t-shirt, or a pair of shorts and a t-shirt or something, and your sweetheart comes in and says, hey baby, we're out of milk and Junior needs some for his Cheerios in the morning. I forgot to pick some up. Can you run down to the convenience store and get a gallon? And you look at yourself and you go, man, I don't want to go put on pants and a belt and a holster and a gun. The convenience store is 2 blocks away. I'll be gone 5 minutes. I'm just going to run. So you run in, grab your wallet and your keys. At last second, you see your Gerber or your Buck knife or your Benchmade or whatever you have. And I'll take that too. And so you grab that and stick that in your pocket. You get in the car. You run down the 2 blocks to the Stop and Rob. You go in. The clerk that you've known for years, Sanjay, is sitting there. He says, hey, Sanjay, how's it going? You notice that the latest edition of Handgun Aficionado's in. So you thumb through it quickly. You go to the back of the store and you go, oh crap, does she get whole milk or 2% for Junior? I don't remember. As you're trying to figure that out in your head, you hear a little commotion up front and you turn around and realize that Skippy the bad guy has come into the store. In his hand, he has a Glock 19 that he took in the home burglary that he committed 2 days ago from some doctor across town. Doesn't know how to use it, but he's sitting there with it on the trigger pointing it at Sanjay saying, give me the money, give me the money, give me the money. As he gets nervous and tenses, he squeezes the trigger, hits Sanjay in the chest. Sanjay goes down, and Skippy all of a sudden goes, oh, crap. And he turns around to see if anybody saw it, and he notices you standing at the back of the store. He's worried about having a witness, so he points the gun at you. There you sit in a gunfight, and all you brought was a knife. And that's a bad situation. Don't bring a knife to a gunfight is a universal truth, and it is a warning to tell you to carry all the time everywhere you go. I've heard you now enunciate that in different ways on your show, saying you'll carry everywhere, carry all the time. And that is what that universal truth is trying to say, is don't show up when somebody pulls a gun on you and all you got in your pocket's a knife. So just wanted to correct that. Again, I think you do a great job with the show. I appreciate your efforts. I have listened to every episode, and I listen each week as I go for my walk daily. I listen to you and several other podcasts, but I do appreciate the effort that you do. And hope you can correct that and put that out there as a universal truth and not as a myth, because it is very far from being a myth. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, Alan, thanks for that voice clip. And, of course, that's the main topic of this episode. Let me start by saying that, Alan, I don't agree that it's a universal truth. So I'm only going to make a partial correction. I'm not going to make a full correction of episode 185. I don't agree that it's a universal truth, as you put it. In your hypothetical example, yes, you're screwed if you have a knife. If Skippy the bad guy is in there robbing the Stop and Rob, and he's got a pistol, and you have a handgun, and you're inside the store, especially if his pistol's already drawn, his fingers on the trigger, yeah, you're screwed. Then you've brought a knife to a gunfight, and you're screwed. But that's far from being a universal truth. Not only is, I agree with you that the myth don't bring a knife to a gunfight. I agree that that might not be a universal myth, but it's also not a universal truth. I'll say that again. It's not a universal myth, but it's also not a universal truth. I'm going to explain that a little later. Most of the time when people say don't bring a knife to a gunfight, what they really mean is that they're trying to say that guns are always superior to knives. I'll say that again. They're trying to say that a gun is always superior to a knife. Now, consider this. There are situations where someone with a knife acting first has the advantage over somebody with a gun. Okay? Think about it. Here's a scenario. Most of you know the Tooler drills designed by Dennis Tooler. We know that most gunfights happen in very close proximity. We know that the rule of 3-3-3, while it's not exact, it's pretty close. 3 yards, 3 seconds, and 3 shots. Most gunfights are over. Most self-defense with a weapon is over. So let's consider 3 to 5 yards, even closer, maybe closer than 3 yards, right? 9 feet. What if someone's 5 or 6 feet away from you? Okay. They draw a knife. Now you've got your gun in your holster. And Skippy the bad guy, instead of holding up the Stop and Rob in Alan's example, Skippy the bad guy's got a big knife, and he wants your wallet or something. And Skippy the bad guy shows up 4 feet in front of you, and he's got his knife already drawn. Your pistol is in your holster. Go to the range and practice that. Have your buddy take a training knife and be 4 or 5 feet away from you. Keep your gun in the holster. Let's see who gets cut up and who can get their gun out and shoot the bad guy. In that situation, in that hypothetical, where the bad guy's 4 or 5 feet away from you with a knife, you've now brought a gun to a knife fight. And you're probably going to get cut real bad. As a matter of fact, you might get incapacitated. If the knife wielder knows what he's doing, he can probably slit your throat and incapacitate you or stab you in other areas multiple times before you can draw your gun and get a shot off. So, not only is this not a universal truth, I understand it's not a universal myth either, Alan, because in your hypothetical example, the knife is inferior. In my hypothetical example, the knife in the hands of someone who knows how to use it and the gun on the hip of someone who doesn't know how to use it, the gun could be inferior weapon in that situation. So, the point here, the major point here that I want to make is it all depends on the situation. It all depends. Now, if distance is involved, see, distance is always your friend. Distance is always your friend in any battle of any kind, whether it's a gunfight, knife fight, whatever. Distance is your buddy. Now, the advantages that guns have is guns, obviously, are more lethal over a long distance. Knives have very limited range. They have limited range, limited to the user of the knife, limited to the bad guy's range. Now, we know that a man in reasonably good shape can travel 18 to 21 feet pretty quickly. And oftentimes, he can travel that distance faster than you can draw your gun and shoot him. And even if you do draw your gun and get one round off, hey, we all know that handguns suck. All handguns suck. So guess what? Since all handguns suck in terms of stopping power, you may have to fire more than one round. How much can he cut you up while you're trying to fire those first couple rounds? So in that case, a gun is not this magic talisman that's going to obviously drop him with the very first shot, and he's not going to, a determined attacker is not going to fall down and pee his pants just because you pulled out a gun. See, think about this. Both the blade and the gun are impact weapons. The blade is faster, more lethal, and more stealth than a gun, but the gun has much farther reach. If you're defending yourself with a holstered gun and you're highly trained against a knife fighter who is trained inside of your reach, you are most likely the victim. I'll say that again. Here's a hypothetical. Okay? If you're defending yourself with a holstered gun, and most of us are, most concealed carriers are in a reactive situation. They're not in a proactive situation. They're reacting to an attack they don't know is coming. So guess what? Your gun is holstered, and in most states, it's concealed. And Skippy the bad guy shows up, and he's got a knife, and he might be fairly trained, and he's within your reach. You, with the gun, are most likely the victim. I'm going to refer you to a great article that says, "Don't bring a gun to a knife fight." And it's written by Michael Janich. So, Alan, I'd like you to read that. I'm going to send you directly. Excuse me, I don't have your email. So I'll tell you what. Please go to the show notes. Now, maybe I do have your email, Alan. That's right. You sent me the voicemail. I'm going to go ahead and send you a direct link to the article by Michael Janich called "Don't Bring a Gun to a Knife Fight." He calls it the other side of the close quarters dilemma. And you read it for yourself and see what you think. Okay, the article was on the Personal Defense Network, and it was written back in January 2010. Now, there are some interesting points in the article, and I'm going to paraphrase some of this, but Michael points out the knifer's advantage. Okay, and he talks about the myth that I pointed out that says don't bring a knife to a gunfight. He says the problem with that logic is against a close-range attack, you've already lost the advantage of distance. Whether you like it or not, you've brought a gun to a knife fight. And in the circumstances of a typical knife attack, the knifer has the advantage. Here's why. Most close-quarters shooting techniques rely on striking or fending off the attack with the free hand. Now, if you think about it, a knife-wielding bad guy that's already within your striking distance, well, if your response is to fight him off using only your weak hand, first of all, that's a bad tactical move. And even if you do have a firearm, it's not a very good idea. Okay, you're probably going to want to fight him off with both of your hands. Therefore, what are you going to draw your pistol with? Another point he makes is one myth of close quarters shooting is that as soon as you draw and fire, the scenario ends and you're safe. As I mentioned before, not always true. At 7 yards, your training has prepared you to shoot as many rounds as necessary to stop your attacker. We call that shooting him to the ground, right? You've heard me talk about that. Well, if you think about that, shooting him to the ground because handguns lack stopping power, well, that lack of stopping power that applies in long-range fights also apply at close range fights. So in other words, you're still going to have to shoot them to the ground, even at close range. Now, you might be thinking that hitting a fight-stopping, or firing a fight-stopping round at close range is easy to do. Well, it might not necessarily be easy to do because you're both going to be moving. You might be wrestling. You might be punching each other, or you might be trying to deflect punches. He might be on top of you. You may have your arms tangled amongst each other. There's all kinds of things that could be happening and going on. He might be trying to prevent you from pulling your gun while stabbing you at the same time. Remember, your gun's in your holster, and it's concealed. The other great point that Michael makes in this article, he says, most close-quarter shooting methods also fail to take into account the effects of the startle response. And that's where it's really interesting. There's been a lot of research lately on the effects of stress when people are in a stressful situation. And the research has shown that in situations of sudden extreme stress, gross motor movements override fine motor movements. Okay, so the problem is at the same time that the defender is trying to execute these adrenaline-charged gross motor movements, he's also expected to simultaneously perform the complex motor movements of drawing your handgun and getting it into position to fire and pressing the trigger and make fight-stopping hits, because we know that handguns suck and you may have to shoot them to the ground. So now you're having to shoot more than once. In the meantime, by this time, he's on top of you with a very sharp and destructive knife. And all you got to do is go to a competition match, go to a force-on-force class, and you'll see that the complex motor skills of drawing a handgun are difficult to perform under stress. So how can you realistically expect the average guy, like me, or even someone that doesn't have any training, how can you expect the average person who doesn't have much training to be able to pull off these complex skills of drawing the handgun and bringing it into play, while at the same time delivering full power strikes or wrestling a knife-wielding attacker to the ground or keeping him from cutting you up? Think about that. How do you expect somebody who doesn't really have a whole lot of training in this type of force-on-force to be able to get their gun out in time to shoot the guy if he's close distance? And you're also having to fend him off. Not just with your weak hand, but you're going to fend him off with your strong hand too, most likely. Most people, the reaction is they're going to fend somebody off with their strong hand, which is the same hand they typically use to draw their gun. And he says that the final disadvantage, and again, I want you to read this article. I'm going to put a link directly to the article. There's pictures and everything and all kinds of good stuff in there. The final disadvantage of close quarter shooting methods is that they only allow for a maximum force response. In other words, if a person carries a handgun as his sole means of defense and doesn't have any other skills, he's limited to defending himself against attacks that involved either the threat of lethal force or severe disparity of size and number. And you'll learn that when you go to Mag 40. So the bottom line, in a close-range attack situation, your first priority should not be drawing your gun. It should be saving your life. And if the knife-wielding bad guy, Skippy, has a knife and attacks you at a range of a few feet, there's a high probability you're going to get cut and cut bad. And you might get incapacitated to draw your gun. And that's reality. That's definitely reality. So let's go back to Alan's example. In that situation, inside of a stop-and-rob convenience store, well, Skippy the bad guy might be a lot farther than a few feet away from you. He might be on the other end of the store. So yes, you should always carry a gun, because in that situation, what I would do, if I find myself in that situation, I carry all the time, and hopefully I have more than my pocket 380, but even if all I have is my pocket 380, I'm going to find a way to get cover or concealment. I don't care which one of them. I need some cover or concealment. I just need a way to buy an extra 1 or 2 seconds of time. You know, maybe 1 second of time, so I can get my gun out. And then I'm going to try to make some split-second decisions to take care of the situation. At least basically to save my hide. That's going to be my only purpose, is to keep Skippy the bad guy from shooting me with that pistol. So, Alan brought up, let's say your spouse asks you to go get milk and you go down to the convenience store. Well, gang, let me tell you what. Here's a good reason why you should have a pocket pistol. Because if you don't want to strap on your belt and your holster and put your gun in your holster, if you don't want to take all that time, it's really easy to take a pocket pistol that's inside of a pocket holster, pull that out of your safe on your way out, throw that into your pocket, and go to the Stop and Rob convenience store. Now you are armed with a gun. So I think everybody who's serious about carrying a gun all the time needs to have a pocket pistol for this reason. Okay? Personally, I try never to be in so much of a hurry that I can't put on a holster. Because let me tell you what, I always wear a belt. But let's say I am in gym shorts. Let's say I'm in gym shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops, and I am sitting there watching TV, and I want to keep my gym shorts and my t-shirt and flip-flops on. That's where a pocket pistol really shines. I go grab my car P380 out of the safe that's always in a pocket holster. I keep it in the holster in the safe. And I just jam that thing into the pocket of my gym shorts. And away I go. It took me an extra 1 minute to get it out of the safe on the way out the door. That extra 1 minute, okay, my wife can wait the extra 1 minute for the milk that I'm about to pick up. And therefore, I always have a gun. That's not ideal. It's not ideal to only have my car P380 in my pocket, but it's better than having just a knife. So, Alan, I know you took issue with me by sending me this, but I'm going to take issue with you and say no, that it's not a universal truth that you shouldn't bring a knife to a gunfight. Because sometimes people bring guns to knife fights, and it really depends on the situation. Now, if you know it's going to be a gunfight, yes, then a knife is inferior. I get that. But who really knows if they're going to be in a gunfight? Unless you're in the military or law enforcement, who really knows? And oftentimes, law enforcement doesn't even know they're about to get into a gunfight. So we as civilians, we're in a defensive role. We're not in an offensive role. We're in a reactive situation. We have to react to a fight we didn't know was coming. So we didn't know we were going to be in a fight at all. And we don't even know what kind of weapon the bad guy is going to have. But I submit this to you listening to this program and to you, Alan. What are you going to do if someone whips out a knife and they're 3 feet away from you? You really think you're going to be able to draw your gun and get enough shots on him to stop him in time before he devastates you with that knife? So I want you to think about that. So lessons learned here from Alan's voicemail and my little dissertation here. Always carry, always carry, always carry. If you have a gun that you can't always carry, get a gun you can always carry. This is a big, big example and a big reason to always have a pocket gun that you can carry. Little J-frame revolvers work great for going down to the Stop and Rob. Okay? Nothing wrong with a 38 Special revolver. Just keep that thing in a pocket holster all the time and stick that into your gym shorts or whatever it is that you're wearing. And ladies can keep that in their purse. It's real easy to do, and they're very safe to carry in that method. But I'm not going to go so far as to say it's a universal truth, Alan. You had me there for a while. You had me thinking, well, okay, all right, maybe it's not always a myth, or maybe it's not a myth at all that you shouldn't bring. I mean, you know, maybe it is the truth that you shouldn't bring a knife to a gunfight. But then I thought to myself, no, it's not a universal truth. Your word universal, that's the problem with your comment right here. That's the problem, is it's not a See, universal means it's always true. I disagree. It's not always true that you shouldn't bring a knife to a gunfight. It is if you know the gunfight's going to happen. But in your example, nobody knew that bad guy was going to be there with a gun. Now, it turned out that he was there with a gun, but who knew that? What if, in your hypothetical example, Alan, what if the person, what if the good guy is 3 feet away from Skippy the bad guy who pulls out a pistol? And then after he shoots the clerk behind the counter, he turns around and you're there 3 feet away. You're screwed even if you have a gun. Unless you know the art of a gun takeaway, or you know the art of getting off the X and getting away from the shooter's line of fire and being able to take away his gun at the same time, which, by the way, you'll learn in 0 to 5 feet pistol gunfighting taught by Suarez International, which I'll be taking again for a second time, if you know some martial arts techniques and Skippy the bad guy's 3, 4, or 5 feet away from you and pointing a gun at you. You might be able to get out of that situation without being shot. Or you could just very well be screwed. But if the bad guy is 3 to 5 feet away from you and you don't have your gun drawn, you're now in a gunfight, gun, knife, I don't care what it is, you're screwed. Unless you know how to get out of that situation. So you need to have some training. So no, it's not a universal truth, Alan. And by the way, speaking of knives, Eric Fritz makes these great little everyday carry knives. Go to fritzknives.com, F-R-I-T-Z, fritzknives.com. His everyday carry knife, this little fixed blade knife, looks like about a 2.5-inch blade or something like that. Fixed blade, carry it in a nice little plastic sheath that clips to your belt. It's totally concealable. Hey, I can get this thing out fast. I can get it out really fast. I can get it out a lot faster than I can get my gun or any folding pocket knife. And I can do some damage with this that I can draw extremely quickly. Okay? So, if someone pulls a knife on me, I may not go to my gun right away. I might try to get away, create distance, keep from getting cut. If I figure that I can't keep from getting cut, I might draw my knife. And it's going to be a bloody, awful, terrible, messy situation. And I'll hope, pray to God that I live through it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that because I have a gun and the gun is superior to the knife guy a few feet away that I'm going to be able to absolutely produce ultimate victory because I have a superior weapon. So, if you know it's going to be a gunfight, then Alan is right. If you know it's going to be a gunfight, then a knife is inferior. But again, I say, who knows if it's going to be a gunfight? So I'm going to correct myself a little bit from episode 185, but I'm not going to go and correct myself to the point to where I say it's a universal truth that you shouldn't bring a knife to a gunfight. Because you know why, Alan? When it comes to self-defense, nothing is a universal truth. No fight goes according to plan. Nothing. Ask anybody who's been in a fight with a gun, knife, or anything. Nothing goes exactly according to the plans that you figured it would amount to. So I don't think so. Nothing is a universal truth when it comes to fighting. And that's my 2 cents on this, and I'd love to hear what yours is. And by the way, I forgot to give out the voicemail earlier. The voicemail is 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com. You can scroll all the way down to the lower right side of the page at handgunworld.com, and you'll see a Call Me button down there. And all you got to do is click that Call Me button, put in your phone number, and the magic of technology will hook up your phone with my voicemail instantly, and you can leave me some messages, as other people have done in this episode. But once again, 210-646-1727. With that said, I left the main topic for the second half of the show. But I kind of wanted to plan it that way on purpose because I wanted to get those voicemails from listeners out of the way. And there were some really good ones, so keep them coming. With all that said, folks, thanks very much to listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop, but I also carry knives. And I'll just leave it at that. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. Remember that the loudest sounds a shooter hears. would be a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Goodbye. Catch you next week.